1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. This is Your Turn, a live call-in show featuring spirited discussion and debate about issues that matter to the community. Your Turn is sponsored by People's First Community Bank, the best bank in the neighborhood. Stay with us to hear what Northwest Florida thinks. Better yet, call in at 623-1330 and tell us what you think. It's Your Turn here on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. Now, here's the host of Your Turn.
Crazy day, a crazy day weather-wise, and we've got a crazy day in terms of trying to get our guests worked out for the afternoon. I apologize. We had John McManus. He's the president of the John Birch Society. He has flown into town. Nice gentleman, Art Gottlieb, filled me in that he was going to be here, and we were going to talk with him about the John Birch Society and also their position on NAFTA and the North American Union. And unfortunately, with the weather, he's coming in from Fort Walton Beach. I think they must be coming through some terrible storms now. So we're just going to go ahead and we're not able to get him back on the line. And we've tried a couple of other folks who we thought might be able to fill in for him, and they haven't. That hasn't panned out either. So we're going to go ahead and get our next guest on the line. Joining us again will be Bruce Hershenson. Bruce was with us a couple of weeks ago, you may recall. We had Bruce on the line, and we didn't get a chance to finish his interview at that time. Bruce is the author of a new book we talked about called Taiwan, the Threatened Democracy. And I invited Bruce to come back this week because after we completed the interview, we only had about a half hour's worth of time with him. We had a lot of folks still calling in who had questions for him, and I pledged to the listeners who were calling in. I took their calls off the air. I pledged to them that I would get Bruce Hershenson back on the line with us to join us on the program to continue the discussion on his book, Taiwan, the Threatened Democracy. And he's agreed to come back and talk about that. And in the meantime, several other issues have come up. I mentioned quite some time ago when Bruce came on the first time that he's a professor of public policy at Pepperdine University, and he served in the administrations of two different U.S. presidents, with Richard Nixon and with Ronald Reagan. And he is an excellent individual to talk with us about a lot of stuff that is going on at an international level. He's an expert in public policy. And so in addition to completing our interview on his book, Taiwan, the Threatened Democracy, we've also asked him to join us to talk about some of the other things that are going on in and around both the United States and internationally. So please welcome back to Your Turn, Bruce Hershenson. Bruce, thanks so much again for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Renee.
Well, and I do have to apologize. I don't remember the name of the one gentleman in particular, but hopefully he's listening again today, although our weather is absolutely crazy and it's really wreaked havoc with...
It is real bad there.
Oh, with what's been going on today with trying to get guests on the line and flights being canceled, but we continue on nonetheless. But
gotcha.
One gentleman, if he's tuned back in, I had a question for you regarding the Korean War and as that may have related with Taiwan and Taiwan's relations with the People's Republic of China. And so, of course, I encourage anyone to call back in, but certainly that gentleman, so we can make sure to get his question answered.
Sure.
Again, I want to start out by talking and trying to complete our interview on your book, Taiwan, the Threat of Democracy. It's just come out. It's a fabulous book. We spent a great amount of time talking about that. But let's back up first, and if you will, fill us in on what, when we hear people talk about a one China policy that apparently the U.S. has adopted, what are they talking about, Bruce?
They're saying that it's, that we should recognize only one China. Very reasonable. That is exactly what we did do at the time that Taiwan split from the People's Republic of China. But what happened in the interim is that Taiwan has become a full-fledged democracy. It has 23 million people. They live under that democracy. They no longer want a claim to be part of China or want to be part of China. It started out that the leader of Taiwan, it was Chiang Kai-shek at the time, said that he wanted to get China back. He wanted to take over China. And Mao Zedong of China said he wants to take over Taiwan. So there were in effect two Chinas. President Truman said we're going to recognize the government on Taiwan as the legal government of China. And that was followed by succeeding presidents until President Carter, who changed it to recognize the People's Republic of China. In 1991, Taiwan became a full-fledged democracy, and the president, a guy by the name of Lee Teng-hui at the time, said, we have no designs on taking over China. There is one problem. It is the official name of Taiwan is the Republic of China, and across the strait is the People's Republic of China on the continent. Taiwan would like to change that name. The current president, Chen Shui-bian, would like to change the name to Taiwan, or the Republic of Taiwan, because it has no designs on China. It agrees there should be a one-China policy in that. There should also be a one-Taiwan policy.
Sure.
You follow me okay, Renee?
Sure.
Yeah, so in other words, two separate entities, two separate countries. They have no design on China. Our policy, which is, in my view, absurd, is a one-China policy, and we don't want them to change the name, and we don't want to recognize Taiwan as a separate entity. In fact, we recognize it as a province of China, which it is not. And the People's Republic of China, as I think I mentioned to you last time, its flag has not flown for 1 minute over Taiwan. They've never adopted in Taiwan the communist system. It is a total democracy. They've never adopted the national anthem, the government of People's Republic. It is absolutely a total independent entity. But we go along with the myth that we say, no, there's a one-China policy. Well, at this date, in fact, since 1991, it is an absurd statement, since no one's saying there are two Chinas. Taiwan isn't saying there are two Chinas. They're saying, yeah, there's one China, there's one America, one United States, there's one Argentina, one Canada, and there's one Taiwan. And if that figures, but to say there's one China and Taiwan is part of it is simply inaccurate. And it goes against everything the United States stands for. We stand for democracies and liberty. Taiwan has it.
Well,
People's Republic of China doesn't.
We've worked so hard, and we're willing to fight in so many places to keep in place a democracy.
You bet.
And here in Taiwan, you have a democracy. You have a nation of people who want to maintain their own country status as Taiwan and their own democracy. But why are we not willing there to do whatever it takes to keep a democracy in Taiwan?
I believe, and I have to preface this by saying I believe, because the government certainly would not say this, I believe it's a great deal of fear of the power of the People's Republic of China, also a great deal of financial interest. There's a lot of business people, not only in the United States, but throughout the world, including some in Taiwan, who have financial interest in the People's Republic of China. They invest with it. They trade. And, boy, the United States is big on that. Just try going to a department store and get something that isn't made in China. And that has a lot to do with it. Also, it is the tremendous military power that China has built up. And it's unfortunate, but our trade, our investment, our putting our arms around the People's Republic of China, has built that superpower. They couldn't have done it without our financial help, but they did, and a lot of people in the United States want to maintain that.
Well, I want to get to that whole issue of the economics, because there's an interesting showdown that may play out between the White House and Capitol Hill on China and its undervalued currency, which I think may play into what ultimately happens in Taiwan. But before I do that, Ed has called in, and I appreciate Ed calling back. Thank you, Ed. It's your turn.
Yeah, really very interesting show. It's kind of a forgotten subject, Taiwan. But
yes.
I seem to recall back from the Korean War, what was the dumb reason that Truman gave why we would not allow Taiwan to send troops, or Chiang Kai-shek to send troops to Korea? After the Chinese invaded North Korea?
Right. I think the reason... I think the reason was that he didn't want to get into a dispute over anything but North and South Korea. It was the Korean War. He didn't want Taiwan to be an entity
maybe free
that...
China? Because Uncle
Joe
didn't want it.
I think that... I think that that was his feeling. I have to say that I think, because I don't have any particular documentation.
Another thing, if I may point out, which I remember that I got in, because I used to stay in trouble with my history professors back there, the communist Chinese used to call
it. If you can do it, speak just a bit louder. I'm having a little difficulty. If you can do it.
Okay, is that better?
Yeah, it sure is.
Okay, I remember my liberal professors calling Chiang Kai-shek the arms merchant to the communists, because and we have to remember that it was Uncle Joe, thanks to Truman under our most favorable nation, that we used to give the arms to Russia or the Soviet Union,
right?
And the Soviet Union would turn around and sell them to China for hard currency.
Absolutely, most favored nation status.
And you have to remember that Truman did not refer to Joseph Stalin as Joseph. He used to think that Joseph, Uncle Joe, was his reference to him. But
time, of course, it wasn't Russia; it was the Soviet Union.
Yeah, it was the Soviet Union.
Right.
And now I don't know if this is turning back, because I think Putin is trying to rejuvenate communism or bring it back.
Well, he's certainly trying to rejuvenate dictatorship and authoritarianism. The one great difference between now with Putin and previously with the Soviet Union is that the Eastern European countries are free. They're not under the domination anymore of the Soviet Union. And also what were previously the republics of the Soviet Union are also now independent states, some of them not getting along too well. But they are independent states rather than republics. So the Soviet Union doesn't have that dinosaur or tarantula type of effect.
How many Eastern nations
Eastern
have
Europe.
Become members of NATO now?
I beg your pardon?
How many Eastern Bloc nations?
Oh, so many. I don't know the precise number, but it started out with Poland, the Czech Republic, and Hungary. I would say probably maybe three-quarters of what used to be really under the Soviets' domination. Some of them were in what was called the Warsaw Pact,
mm-hmm.
which was the alliance of pro-Soviet countries.
And the biggest fear that I have with communist China is the fact that they will sell arms to anybody and anything. They will sell it to gangs of Los Angeles.
Oh, no question. They already did it to and are doing it with North Korea, Iran,
North Korea.
Missiles, and not only missile technology, but nuclear technology.
And we have many of our politicians or husbands or wives of our politicians that are willing to sell their countries for a few bucks.
I do know that.
Silver.
I do
know that.
That's
the sorry part about it. But I don't know if in the future with the time passing, will we have as strong of a defense of Taiwan? And I think what would be important for Taiwan is to really arm themselves. And I can't understand why. Does Taiwan have nuclear weapons?
No, they do not. We were opposed to it, and they wanted to have them. We were opposed to it. That was under the
Maybe they could buy them from the Red Chinese.
Particularly under the Carter administration.
They could buy them from the Red Chinese.
Did you hear him, Bruce? He said maybe they could buy him from the Red Chinese.
I mean, that's sell them to, I mean, I'm serious.
That might be one that that China will refuse.
But now, I wonder if Taiwan, because Taiwan is a technologically advanced country.
I'm sorry, again, I'm losing you just a little bit. I'm sorry.
They're a technically logically advanced country.
Oh, no question about it.
I wonder if they don't have it and they're just keeping their mouth shut.
I hope they do, but I don't think they do. I do hope they do, but I just don't believe that they have that. I certainly could be wrong.
Now, did they get the F-16 that they were
going to
buy?
They're going to. The real problem domestically with Taiwan, and boy, is this a problem. The old political party, you remember the initials KMT, the Kuomintang?
Yeah, that was...
Okay, that was Chiang Kai-shek's party, was indeed a dictatorship, and they were continually in office because there were no free elections. When the free election started, the Kuomintang, then in the year 2000, I shouldn't say right away, but in the year 2000, was voted out of office. They had free elections, and they were voted out. Well, the Kuomintang is still, in a sense, democracy is their enemy, because with democracy, they lost the presidency. And they have been not only putting their arms around the People's Republic of China, just as the United States has, but going even further than that. Their leaders have been going to Beijing and trying to, in a sense, be a friend with Beijing. They don't seem to regard the 988 missiles as much of a threat as the rest of Taiwan does. And there's going to be a presidential election next March. They have them every 4 years as we do, but it's in March, and it's going to be the old Kuomintang party against the Democratic Progressive People's Party, which is the Independence Party.
Taiwan could probably get it from the Soviet Union. They could probably find a couple scientists. I'm serious. Look at all the arms they sell throughout the world to the lowest bidder or highest bidder.
Sure.
And that's probably what it's going to take. Ed, listen, I need to take a very quick break.
You
can stay on the line if you want to finish up when we come back from the break. If you want to stay on the line, we'll let you talk a little bit more. Or you can just call back if you'd like.
Okay,
but I do have to take
back,
a quick break.
Thank you very much. Very interesting.
We'll be right back. We're talking with Bruce Hershenson. He's a professor of public policy at Pepperdine University. He also served in the administrations of two U.S. presidents, Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan. And he's the author and expert on Taiwan. The book is called Taiwan, the Threatened Democracy. We'll be right back after this break. And Crazy Ed, you're up next, so stay tuned.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
We're back, and we're talking with Bruce Hershenson. He's the author of a brand new book. It's called Taiwan, the Threatened Democracy. And after you enjoy that book, I encourage you to pick up another one of his books. It's called Passport. Go ahead, Crazy Ed. It's your turn.
Good afternoon. Everything going okay?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question. Crazy Ed, it has been a crazy afternoon. The weather has just wreaked havoc on my show. But thankfully, I have Bruce on the line for a full hour, so I don't have to juggle between planes that didn't land and thunderstorms that cut this one off. But anyway, go on.
Our problem with Taiwan.
Do you want me to call you Crazy or Ed?
Well, you can call me Ed. No, that word crazy was given to me by Judy Sutherland, who used to do a show there at WEBY years ago.
I got you.
She says that things you come up with, you're crazy, so we'll call you Crazy Ed from now on.
Okay.
See, our problem with Taiwan is that we talk and we make promises and then we do nothing. Right? You're not. Late 1954, we went over there to protect the Tachin Islands, and then by February 55, we were protecting the Taiwan evacuation. And let's see, we had one aircraft shot down, and the aircraft I was in came back to the ship with 32 holes in it, but that's another story. And then the Chinese took it over. Then in July of 58.
Okay.
Four aircraft carriers, we were supposed to deploy in September, we left in July with three other aircraft carriers, bypassed Hawaii, no RI, and that went to Guam, picked up nuclear weapons, and then we went to the Taiwan Straits. And we were zipping around there, protecting them, I guess. And we were going to bomb airfield there at Fuzhou. Saturday morning at 4:30, we're loaded up with bombs, getting ready to taxi to the airport, and we get the sign to cut. Then Monday, same thing, load up the bombs, we're going to go. Nope, I can't make up his mind, so we cut again. And then all we did was fly at 10 or 12,000 feet up and down the Taiwan Straits for 60 days and did absolutely nothing.
Okay,
and
I'm
I think
really,
that's what we're going to do now.
With this, as I probably should be. I'm just not.
Pardon me?
I know a little bit about what you're saying. Some of the most of the details that you said I did not know. Are you on, Ed?
Yeah, I'm on, but I'm losing you.
Yeah, I just wanted you to know that. So I really have very little to say, except I have no reason to doubt what you're saying.
Well, I'll tell you one thing about Taiwan. It's a great place to visit.
I'm sorry?
I said one thing about Taiwan is that it's a great place to visit.
It's a marvelous place. I think you'll remember that it became the focus of the 1960 debates between Kennedy and Nixon at the time. The focus. It was about the only thing they really argued about in the debates. And it was that whether or not we should defend the offshore islands that are very close to continental China. Senator Kennedy was saying that we should by all means defend Taiwan, but those two little offshore islands that were largely uninhabited, we should not go to war for that, but we would go to war for Taiwan.
Well, they said that before.
Candidate or Vice President Nixon was saying that we should go to war even for those two offshore islands because it would be a stepping stone to Taiwan. That was about the only real debate that they had of real substance in all four debates that they entered into, which incidentally were probably the best presidential debates that we've ever had.
Well, I think we ought to protect them.
Of course we should. And actually, it really is part of our law. We have the Taiwan Relations Act that was passed in 1979 that commits us to the defense of Taiwan.
All right. You take good care of yourself. Keep up the good work. And I'm going to have to go get your book.
Thanks, Ed, very much.
Thank you, Ed. Okay, go ahead, Tony. It's your turn.
Hi, Mr. Hershison.
Hi.
Hey, I've got a question I'd like to ask you about. With regards to China, and if it's true or not that they've been using some of the, Western principles capitalism,
capitalism.
Their businesses over there?
No question.
To some degree?
Oh, to a great degree.
Okay.
Highly capitalistic in the urban areas, not in the rural areas, but in the urban areas, in Beijing, in Shanghai, Guangzhou, the urban areas are highly capitalistic.
Tony, you're going to have to hold your thought, and Bruce will as well, because CNN is going to cut us off in about 20 seconds. Tony,
okay.
Can you stay on the line
sure.
for the break?
Be glad to.
Okay, we'll be right back after this short break. We're talking with Bruce Hershenson. He's a professor of public policy at Pepperdine University. He served in the administration of two presidents, President Nixon and Ronald Reagan. And we're talking about his recently released book, Taiwan, the Threatened Democracy. We'll be right back after this short break with Tony's other questions.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
Tony, thanks so much for staying with us through the break. Go ahead. You've got some more questions for Bruce Hershenson.
Yes. The question I wanted to get at was with them using capitalistic principles and their populace getting exposed to that. What is the chance of that ever taking root in China and, usurping the communist system? And
I think very, very little. Remember that you can have capitalism and still have a dictatorship. I would call the People's Republic of China a fascist government rather than a communist government.
Right.
They still refer to themselves as Marxist.
Yeah, doesn't it just all get down to who's in control of the
sure.
capitalist state? I mean, if it's government controlled,
sure.
then it's communism or some other form.
Yeah,
versus
Germany was capitalistic.
Right.
You can be enslaved and still have capitalism. But and granted, you have to have capitalism in order to be free. But that does not necessarily mean that you are free when you have capitalism. Capitalism and communism are sort of the economic dimensions of politics. They're not necessarily determining whether they're going to be free or a dictatorship. In terms of will it do it? That is often the feeling of a lot of people who invest. I don't know who invest in China. I do not know whether they say it to justify what they're doing or if they really believe it. Probably a little of both, because sometimes when you want something for personal gain, you find a justification that sounds moral. No, I don't believe it. And the reason I don't believe it is that the Soviet Union's system, the evil empire, as President Reagan accurately called it. It collapsed, it fell, it died because of economic ruin, and I see no reason why China's dictatorship would die because of economic health. They have no punishments right now. They don't receive any punishments, so sure, they'll be capitalistic. They'll take in all the money. They'll spend it on missiles. They'll spend it on nuclear weapons. They'll build up their cities. They'll do all of the. They'll have human rights violations galore, and there's no punishment. And so my guess is, without any punishment, in terms of economic punishment, they're just going to continue this way. There is no incentive for them to turn to democracy.
Well, that was my fear. That's what I believe.
Gotcha, yeah.
I'm glad to hear somebody in the know kind of back me up on that. But, you know, I've heard people tell me, you know, that scenario that I mentioned. But
yeah.
What I see is China vastly increasing their military might and their contacts around the world.
Every year, it's a double-digit increase in their military. And that's all that they admit to. But sure, I do find that a lot of people who will say, no, this is the way for them to really turn around and become a democracy because they get exposed to all of this. Well, the people get exposed to it, but the people don't run the show. And that's the problem with any dictatorship.
If they really were interested in themselves becoming a democracy, I don't understand why they'd have the sustained obsession, as you refer to it in your book, the sustained obsession to own and extinguish the democracy of Taiwan.
Exactly right. Exactly right. I don't want to be repetitive, but beware. Whenever you talk to someone who says, no, they're going to be okay because of our investment, our trade, and all of that, ask them if they have any investments or any financial interest in China itself.
Well, Tony and Bruce, let me ask you this. Right now, there's a reported showdown between the White House and Capitol Hill over how best to address what has been referred to as China's undervalued currency,
right.
and there are these other alleged unfair trade practices. Tony, I'm sure you know about them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where the economic harm could come from that may put the brakes on some of this, or is that not even going to...
I guess it will not put the brakes on it. We're really talking about the difference in currency and whether or not the trade status that we have back and forth is fair or unfair because of their undervaluation of their own currency. Again, we're not even approaching it from a moral standpoint, or a human rights standpoint, or a dictatorship standpoint. It's all economics. It's what would be economically in the best interest of business people here, and not just business people, but trade in a general sense. I don't think it's certainly unfair to the People's Republic. No question about it. But I don't think that that'll be a determining factor.
What do you think, Tony?
Well, I also agree that, you know, I'm very sadly dubious about the will of our nation nowadays with the leaders that we have in power to have the strength and the moral character to actually stand up to China and do anything. Because like it's been said, it's all about the money. It's like, you know, too many people want to be able to go to Walmart and get something cheap. And, I mean, I like that myself, but every time I do it, I kind of cringe thinking, I just bought China another missile, another bullet.
I was telling Renee something, maybe it was on the last time that I was on, that years ago I sort of went on a personal crusade of my own that I would not buy anything from the People's Republic of China, period.
It's
just won't buy
difficult
it.
Difficult to do.
It is now impossible. It isn't just Walmart. It's almost unfair to just, you know, point your finger at Walmart because it's everywhere you go. I have to, in order to just carry on a normal life, I can't look at every label of everything I get and turn it back if it's made in China, because in some cases, in fact, in many cases, there's no competition.
Yeah.
Too bad.
We've ended up with a trade deficit with China at $230 billion?
I don't know. Renee, do you remember when we got mad at Japan because of the trade deficit? Do you remember that?
No.
It was during the beginning of the Reagan administration. I mean, it's a long time ago now. But boy, we were really boiling. No one seems to be boiling about the deficit, which is by far worse than it ever was with Japan.
Is it really $230 billion?
I don't know the precise figure today. It seems to go up every single month.
In a layperson's terms, what does that mean, Bruce or Tony, either one? What does that really mean? What does
in
that mean to me?
In a layperson's terms, I guess the best way to describe it would just be that this is our loss. This is the U.S. loss in terms of trade. They prosper X amount of money while we have an X amount diminishment of ours.
And I'd like to think that they're using that to buy health care for all of their residents, which is like to do with ours. But I would venture to guess that's certainly not true.
I don't think so. Really.
No, no. All right, Tony, anything else for him? Because Bill's on hold.
No, that's pretty much my question. I just want to get his take on that.
Well, Bill, you call back
thanks.
If you have more. I appreciate all your comments and certainly your knowledge on this issue. It's
very much
extremely
so.
Well appreciated. Okay, go ahead, Bill. Thank you so much for staying on. It's your turn.
Okay, thanks. Isn't that an oxymoron, the People's Republic of China?
Of course.
Of course,
anytime,
yeah.
Anytime you hear a country that's called a People's Democratic Republic or something like that, that's what it is, too, for North Korea. You know that it has nothing to do with the people. You know that it isn't a democracy and it's not a republic.
Of course, yeah, I know that, but I just want to get it out because
right.
It was, you know, like tongue-in-cheek. Yeah, the People's Republic of China. You betcha. Hey, I want to just pass the word to you. I know Ed personally.
Uh-huh.
If you want a great interview, this man worked his way up to E9, a master chief in the Navy. 90% of his time was aboard carriers in the Pacific.
I gotcha. I could tell he sure knew what he was talking
yes,
about.
Yes, sir. And if you want a great interview, you better get his number and you'd be enlightened of what he knows about that area. Because he spent over 30 years in the Navy.
Good for
90% of the time were on carriers in the Pacific. So I just want to put a plug in for Ed. He's a good friend of mine. And that man knows about Taiwan and that whole area.
I could tell. That was marvelous.
Okay, I just thought I'd bring that up if you want a good interview sometime. Maybe get some background
interviewing, but it's good to know, and I know that I can get hold of him through Renee.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you could.
If there's ever a sequel to Taiwan, the Threatened Democracy,
yeah,
you might want to grab hold of him and talk with him about it. All right, thank you, Bill. We appreciate your call, as always.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Thank
bye-bye.
You.
Okay, go ahead, Mark. It's your turn.
Hey, thanks, Renee.
Thank you.
I always enjoy your guests here. Listen, my comment is in regards to the question, will our trade and capitalism influence China's path? And I always say that the best look forward is a good look back in the past.
Uh-huh.
And if you remember the Tiananmen Square, the troops that were used were rural, uneducated farm boys. They were divisions
the people from Beijing, the armed forces they had in Beijing, were not going to attack, and that's when they got the people from the rural areas.
Right, and it's difficult for Americans to realize because our communications are so free and readily free that there are millions upon probably tens of millions or more of Chinese that have in their village have only the government radio.
Sure.
And there is no outside contact whatsoever. So when the government says, you know, as they did in Tiananmen Square, that, you know, there's an anti-revolutionary forces and you've got to go crush them, then they believe that and they go do it. And
exactly.
So
and
what I see happening is that the people that are exposed to capitalism, they will be influenced. But it won't matter because if the government needs to crush them, they just call on these people that they keep in the peasant state and they will do their bidding.
Yeah, that really was proven at Tiananmen Square. That is true. And incidentally, that is still justified. The massacre of Tiananmen Square is still justified by the leaders, President Hu Jintao, to this very day. And it was President Jiang Zemin who told President Clinton If we didn't do what we did in Tiananmen Square now, we wouldn't have the stability that we're enjoying today.
You're absolutely right. You make that point very well. Mark, thanks so much for your call. Mark was going to sign off so he could just continue to listen.
I got you.
Okay, well, we'll go ahead with Ron then. Ron, it's your turn.
Thank you very much. It's already been established that we have a tremendous trade deficit with China.
Yes.
And Renee, I think your figures are just a tad low.
I believe they could be, yeah.
But my concern is more, you know, what can this country do, United States do, to take a firm stance with Taiwan, given the fact that China, not only do we have the trade deficit, but look at how much paper they hold for our debt.
You mean the currency, the undervalued currency that they have? And
I'm not talking about the trade, you know, the difference valuation of the dollar.
Okay.
But what I'm talking to, and your guests may well want to address this a little bit more, but they own a whole lot of our treasury notes. They bought a lot of that. They own a lot of this country.
Well, and there's also all kinds of other alleged unfair trade practices that I'm sure Bruce could talk on and on about. But Ron,
counterfeiting,
you're right.
And all kinds of things.
And
taking products of name luxury brands and then making replicas of them and selling them for peanuts. I mean,
right, they do that all the time. And I'm talking about just the actual paper that they're holding.
No, I understand
that. If they decide they want to go ahead and cash it in tomorrow, if we start saying, all right, we're going
to
support Taiwan and China, y'all just go ahead and pound sand, and they start saying, all right, fine, we want to go ahead and cash in our notes now. What kind of shape is that going to put this country into? And I'll just hang up and listen. Thank you.
Well, in my view, it would put us in terrible shape. Economically, it would just be awful. But I think it is worse, much worse, not to do what is morally right. What I would like to see our government do, whether it's this administration or the next administration, whatever administration it may be, is to recognize Taiwan as an independent nation and deal with it as we do every other independent nation. Otherwise, we're lying to ourselves, we're lying to the world, because we know that it's independent. Right now, something that that has just happened very recently is the president made a statement, I mean a formal statement, although we knew it was true before, that he endorses the independence of Kosovo. Well, fine, I do too. Serbia wouldn't be happy about that. We did the same thing with Macedonia. And these are our nations. A very, very small population, nothing like Taiwan's.
Well, there's an article that you wrote about, you know, the whole relationship between the Palestinian Authority and Israel as well, the Israel-Palestine issue. And that's another great example, Bruce.
It is. We are asking for a two-state solution. In the last number of days, we might be referring to a three-state solution. With the Palestinian Authority and Israel, I see no reason why in the world we say that the Palestine Authority should be recognized as an independent state, that there should be two states, Israel and the Palestinian Authority, while we say that when it comes to a friend of ours, Taiwan, that they do not deserve an independent state, whereas the Palestinian Authority, which is no friend of the United States, does deserve to have a state of its own. I just don't get it. The Palestinian Authority certainly Hamas has at its root the lust to take over Israel, and we know that Israel is a friend. Palestinian Authority is not. In today's world, I just have to inject something because of what happened in the past number of days. Hamas has taken over the Gaza. Palestinian Authority still holds the West Bank. But we're going to help the Palestinian Authority, obviously, because although both of them are god-awful, Hamas is worse, and it's financed by Iran. And
right.
So, you know, I understand what we're doing here, but it's dangerous. It's dangerous stuff. At the same time, when we're talking about Taiwan and China, We're saying, no, it's just one place, and Taiwan's part of China.
But that's the point of this, is we need to understand that this is equally as dangerous stuff. I mean, we could have been having this conversation 5 years ago about the Middle East, and we should have been, but we weren't. And now we're having it about China, and I hope 5 years from now, going with Mark's analogy, we're not going to be looking back and, you know, not learning any lessons. Bruce, I have to pay the bill one more time, and we've got all our lines lit up. So
okay.
I know you'll stay with us through the break, and when we come back, Bob, it'll be your turn. We'll be right back after this break.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
I want to apologize very quickly to the listeners who tuned in earlier to hear the John Birch Society President John McManus with us on the program. He got caught in some bad weather, and we weren't able to keep him on the line, but you can hear him talk tonight. That's Monday, June 18th, this evening at the Vickery Center, which is on Summit, about a quarter mile east of 12th Avenue at 6:30 p.m. this evening. Admission is $10. Hopefully you'll show up to listen to his talk. I also would encourage you, a lot of the discussion that we've been having the last hour with Bruce Hershenson reminds me of a video that John McManus has out. It's called The Overview of America, and it walks us through the different forms of government, democracy, oligarchy, anarchy, all of that, as well as, you know, how some of our freedoms are being diminished and how we're at crossroads. And if we don't go back to a moral stance, much like we're talking about with Taiwan, you know, our freedoms are going to be continued to be treaded upon. So very interesting. Hopefully you'll join him for his discussion tonight about NAFTA. I want to make sure to get that out. Thank you so much for holding through the break. Bob, it's your turn.
Hey there. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you. Bruce, do we still have you?
You sure do.
Thanks,
of course.
Bruce.
Hey there. You know, it seems to me that our government, all three branches, as well as the State Department at the federal level, and even down to state and county government levels, seem to ignore problems almost like somebody with a pot on the stove and the fire is boiling away and it's spilling all over the edges of the pot. We then go and mop up things before nipping it in the bud. And let me take you back 37 years to 1970 when we were engrossed in the Southeast Asia conflict in Vietnam, and some of the American public was beginning to wake up and wonder what that quagmire was all about, what we were doing over there. You know, we're now in Southwest Asia in a similar quagmire. You know, long before the Nixon administration sent Henry Kissinger over to the Paris peace talks and eventually over to China to open up the Chinese to the West, to capitalism and such, I was telling people that Hitler, the Nazis, and the Germans were not the master race. It was going to be the Chinese. Mm-hmm. And I think that's coming to pass. Because this trade imbalance, I don't think just goes on with us in the U.S. of A. I think China is manufacturing and dumping stuff all over the free democratic capitalist world in European countries and such. Am I incorrect in that assumption?
No, you're not incorrect. I agree with the last half of what you said, but I got to tell you that I have... that I don't agree with the first half when you talk about a quagmire in Vietnam and the Paris peace talks. I think this is so important, and I realize, Renee, you have so little time left.
We've got a minute, Bruce.
How much?
A minute.
A minute. I'll just say this. We have tremendous amnesia as to why South Vietnam and Cambodia surrendered. They surrendered not because of our lack of fighting ability, not because of the lack of the South Vietnamese fighting ability. It was the lack of funds, even though we promised them at the Paris Peace Agreements, we promised them funds. Our Congress, the 94th Congress, turned them off until when we knew that that Saigon and Phnom Penh were going to have to surrender. And President Ford went to Capitol Hill, literally begged for more money. The Congress wouldn't do it, and both South Vietnam and Cambodia fell.
Yeah, well, Dr. Hershenson,
I'd like to discuss 60 seconds, what really takes a good deal longer.
But sometime, Renee, I'd love to discuss that with you.
Yes.
I'll hang up, so we're going to be out of time soon.
Okay. Well, Bob, thank you, and I apologize because you were on hold, and what we'll do is we'll ask Bruce to come back because this sounds like a debate we need to have and certainly one that I'd like to have.
I'd love to do that, particularly regarding that period of history.
Yes, I'd like to let Bob get his comments and thoughts in.
Of course.
And we will absolutely reschedule again. Bruce, and you've been so gracious to join us for another hour, but that's all we have for today.
Thanks, Renee.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Bruce Hershenson, Taiwan, The Threatened Democracy. Buy the book. We'll have Bruce back. Thanks so much.